Janaydney Campbell, and this is the History of Musical Theatre podcast. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 6, George Balanchine and Vera Zarina. Balanchine had done a little work in Hollywood in 1937 on a film called The Goldwyn Follies, which was a version of the musical revues that played on Broadway. It was there that he first worked with Vera Zarina. Vera's actual birth name was Eva Bridget Hartwig. And she was still called Bridget in her private life, though on stage she went as Vera Zarina. She played Tamara Jeeva's role in On Your Toes in London, in a production which wasn't a flop, but was still far less successful than its Broadway counterpart. The Goldwyn Follies was to be her first film in a 7-film contract, on the condition that Balanchine choreographed all of them. That was a condition that she picked before she'd actually ever worked with Balanchine. I guess On Your Toes is just that good. There were initially plans to have a giant ballet to the music An American in Paris, but there were some filming constraints, so that music would be left for another to create with. That part of the story is still to come. Instead, Balanchine and Zarina collaborated on 2 other pieces for the film, a giant water ballet and a send-up of Romeo and Juliet. If you've seen the film Hail Caesar, Scarlett Johansson's character is in a very similar water ballet. Although the special effects in The Goldwyn Follies leave 1 or 2 things to be desired. But for 1937, having someone emerge out of a pond and then dance on that same pond, we'll accept it. The other piece was a send-up of Romeo and Juliet, in which Vera's Juliet danced alongside William Dollar's Romeo. William Dollar himself was an SAB student and an American Ballet Company member. His early dance education had been with Mikhail Mordkin, Alexandra Volynin, and Mikhail Fokine. If those names sound familiar, they should. It's a bit of a who's who of non-Balanchine Russian ballet. That section of the dance also included a dance-off between the families, with the Montagues as ballet dancers and the Capulets as tap dancers. I'd be on board to see a full production of that. Maybe I should just do that. I'll keep you posted. It was working together on this film that George and Vera fell in love. No. The reason their relationship worked in the beginning was also the reason it couldn't possibly last. Much as he didn't want to choreograph them, Balanchine wanted to be married to a sylph. He found himself drawn to Zarina's cold detachment. This coldness may have been a contributing factor into why she didn't have the same film career as some of her warmer counterparts. It wasn't without reason, though. She'd had an intense and actually traumatic relationship with Massine years earlier. Yes, the same Massine. He was much older, and the disintegration of the relationship left her hurt and extremely guarded. Rodgers and Hart saw her in the film and cast her at once in their next musical, I Married an Angel. Obviously, Balanchine had to be brought back to choreograph it. The show was adapted from a Hungarian play, which was originally intended as a screenplay. The basic story is that a man vows he will only marry an angel, and somehow that works for him. The show became crazy successful, and Vera along with it. Her taxi drivers would find themselves starstruck. Balanchine asked Vera to marry him, and although she was reluctant at first, they married in secret on Christmas Eve, before returning to the party being held at their apartment like nothing had happened. Rodgers and Hart were talking about how there had never been a musical adapted from a Shakespeare play, and that combined with the fact that Lorraine's brother, Teddy Hart, was often confused with another comic actor, Jimmy Savo, brought them to A Comedy of Errors. Both men starred in the show. It was produced, directed, and had a book by George Abbott. It might seem odd that there had never been a musical adaptation of a Shakespeare play, but it also seems to be true. There had been plenty of operas and ballets, but the next musical comedy wasn't until Swingin' the Dream the following year, based on A Midsummer Night's Dream. I'm hoping to do a whole season in future on various music-based adaptations of Shakespeare, so stay tuned. The Shakespeare Nerd will be completely released in the months to come. While Vera was on tour with I Married an Angel, Balanchine joined Rodgers and Hart for the last time to choreograph this production, entitled The Boys from Syracuse. All of this work on Broadway and in Hollywood stood in contrast to his ballet work. The American Ballet had essentially dissolved by this point, and he'd stepped away from the School of American Ballet, leaving it in the hands of Kirstein and Dmitriev. Well, until the latter was bought out, which absolutely no one was sad about because he sucked. My favourite thing about being involved in pop history is that I can just say that someone sucked with no sources. My source is the book Balanchine the Ballet Maker. It's a great book. Pop history's fun. Tamara Jeeva continued to perform this year in London in the play Idiot's Delight. Alyssa Alonso and her husband Ferdinand moved to New York to continue their dance careers. Alyssa was pregnant, but after giving birth to their daughter, she returned to dance, studying at the School of American Ballet. The two of them made their Broadway debuts that year in the ensemble of Great Lady. Nora Kay and Jerome Robbins were also in the cast. It had music by Frederick Lowe and was choreographed by William Dollar. You might think that all that star power together, especially if you know the rest of Alyssa Alonso's story, would make the show a guaranteed success, but it flopped pretty quickly. Balanchine spent much of 1939 in Hollywood, with his biggest project being the film adaptation of On Your Toes, bringing his new wife, Vera Zorina, to play the role he created for his first wife. He also worked as a ballet coach for actress Jane Bryan, working on the film We Are Not Alone. Jane Bryan had a short but successful film career, doing 18 films between 1936 and 1940. In 1937, she starred in Marked Woman alongside Betty Davis. We Are Not Alone was her third to last film. In 1939, on New Year's Eve, she married businessman Justin Whitlock Dart Sr., which is a name and a half. He's making the Remington Aidney Campbells of the world jealous. Unlike Balanchine's Christmas marriage to Vera Zorina, Justin and Jane were married until he died 44 years later. In his later life, after getting married but before, you know, carking it, Justin Whitlock Dart Sr. would become an advisor to Ronald Reagan. The next year was also spent in part in Hollywood, on the film I Was an Adventuress, with Vera Zorina playing a con woman and George choreographing. The film included a Swan Lake number. Why? I have no idea. I do want to know how these Golden Age films managed to squeeze musical numbers into everything, and then have modern films do that. Vera Zorina was not a technically brilliant dancer. She was a great performer, but she didn't have the best training, and that's reasonably visible in this film. On Broadway, Balanchine choreographed Keep Off the Grass. It was a resounding flop, with its one notable point being the inclusion of José Limón in the cast. José Limón was born in Sinaloa, Mexico, and studied and danced with Doris Humphrey and Charles Wademan. It would be almost a decade from now until The Moors Pavane, his first major work based on Shakespeare's Othello, would be created. George Balanchine choreographed another Broadway show this year, with another significant pioneer of contemporary dance. This time it was Katherine Dunham, who performed in the show and choreographed sections of the musical. This episode has basically become Easter eggs for contemporary dance nerds. I like it. Dunham was a modern dancer who came up in a theatre industry where roles for black dancers were pretty much exclusively in tap dance. I don't mean mostly, I mean like all of the roles. But Katherine Dunham wasn't a tap dancer. She was a modern dancer and a really influential one. Because of the state of the industry at the time, in the work she created, she would often have to train the African-American dancers she cast in her own works alongside rehearsals. Cabin in the Sky was an all-black production, and the later film version would feature John Bubbles, a crazy famous tap dancer who played Sport and Life in the original production of Porgy and Bess. There was also a Bill Bojangles Robinson impersonator. Bojangles was also a crazy famous tap dancer. His birthday is National Tap Dance Day in the US. It's also coming up on May 25th. Send a loved one a pair of tap shoes to celebrate. Especially if I'm that loved one. Balanchine's third Broadway show was another collaboration with his wife in the Irving Berlin musical Louisiana Purchase, with him choreographing and Zorina playing Marina Van Leeden. Victor Moore plays a senator sent out to investigate the Louisiana Purchase. After playing the vice president in Of Thee I Sing and Let Him Eat Cake, and an ambassador in Leave It to Me. He was a career pretend politician. This was Irving Berlin's first show in almost 7 years. In the ballet world, Jerome Robbins, who was not yet that Jerome Robbins, to steal Joan Baillie's phrasing, joined the Ballet Theatre. This company would go on to become American Ballet Theatre, or ABT. If you want to know more about what Jerome Robbins was doing, I'd recommend checking out my whole episode on him from last season. Otherwise, we might be fairly brief with what he does. Heading north, in Canada, Nora and Patricia White, along with their teacher and her fellow dancers, performed for the Canadian military. The next year, the young Canadians travelled to New York to audition for the School of American Ballet. Joan Baillie's former teacher, Muriel Stewart, hosted this audition. Both of them were accepted, but only 16-year-old Nora was able to stay, living with family friends. Patricia was then only 13, and she would have to wait to attend the school. Nora would send letters describing class combinations for Patricia to try. At the time, the curriculum included ballet, character dance, Spanish, and modern. Tamara Jeeva performed in another play on Broadway, The Trojan Woman, as Euripides. Jerome Robbins was promoted to soloist at Ballet Theatre after spending the summer studying with Anthony Tudor and Anton Dolan. There was more ballet work this year. Balanchine staged Le Baiser de la Fée, My French is Still Bad, and Serenade for the Ballet Rooster Monte Carlo, now more permanently touring in the United States because of the logistical nightmare that was the Second World War. He also created a balustrade for Tormanova, but she was so drowned in Chul that however the beautiful the choreography may have been, it was functionally rendered invisible to the audience. Kirstein, along with actually running Balanchine's ballet school, was scheming, in the good empresario kind of way, with Nelson Rockefeller, who was the coordinator of inter-American affairs for the State Department, as well as being famous for being stupidly rich. They schemed to take a goodwill ballet tour to Latin America. The company went for 5 months and did more than 100 shows. For this tour, Balanchine choreographed Concerto Barocco and Ballet Imperial. Both of these are still common pieces of the Balanchine rep. His early biography can be seen somewhat in these two works. Concerto Barocco uses as its music Bach's D minor concerto for two violins. Mr. B took two principal dancers and assigned them each a violin. The original ballet was a little different from the contemporary version that exists. It was a little jazzier, and the iconic Balanchine basic costumes were a later addition. Ballet Imperial was set to Tchaikovsky's Piano Concerto No. 2. It draws on the Russian tradition, with Tchaikovsky being the obvious choice for that. Later, someone would ask Balanchine why he didn't restage Petipa's Paquita. His response was that people would see what he stole from the ballet for Ballet Imperial. The principal dancer in that piece was Marie Jean, who was a sometime girlfriend of George. That was complicated by the fact that her idea of marriage involved, I don't know, fidelity and children. I know, right? Vera Zarina considered coming on this tour, but didn't. Her marriage to George Balanchine was falling apart. She spoke of it saying, "He put women on a pedestal where they don't necessarily want to be. Women don't want to be idolized, which can be dehumanizing. It can be oppressive to be loved so much, even suffocating." Like with Jeeva and Daniel Lover before, the marriage had little grounding outside of immediate passion and the desire to work on dance together. Many of the mundane things that can provide stability and grounding in a marriage were absent in each of these relationships. It was ultimately Zarina who left Balanchine, with the marriage falling apart over the next few years. There would be a number of other losses in the next years. The school building would be damaged by fire, and Lincoln Kirstein enlisted to fight in the Second World War. This year was also the home to Balanchine's weirdest work to date. It was a piece he set to a Stravinsky commissioned score called Circus Poker. Okay. Sounds normal enough. It was for the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus, and it was a ballet for elephants. Not dancers playing elephants, elephants playing dancers. The olden days were weird. The elephants wore light blue tutus, so now I'm imagining elephants dancing serenade.
¶¶
1842, Tamara Jeever married actor John Emery. His background included a lot of Shakespeare as well as Lilum, the play that Carousel would later be based on. Jerome Robbins was promoted to the rank of principal dancer at Ballet Theatre. Balanchine choreographed another movie for Vera Zorina, Star Spangled Banner. The film was directed by George Marshall, who directed the Goldwyn Follies in the previous years. It also starred Bing Crosby, Mary Martin, and Dick Powell. On Broadway, he choreographed the musical The Lady Comes Across, which included Broadway choreographer-to-be Gower Champion. He also worked on the operetta Rosalinda with José Limón and William Dollar. Also on Broadway, Balanchine collaborated with the New Opera Co. on an opera-ballet mixed program. The opera was the Fair at Sorochinsk. Let's go with that. Alongside a revival of the Russian tribute ballet Imperial. William Dollar and Nora White were both in this production. Nora's mother and sister came to New York to see the production, where both Nora and Petrusha were promptly cast as extras in Mikhail Fokine's Petrushka. The choreographer had recently died, and the ballet was part of a memorial concert. Andrei Alevsky and baby ballerina Arina Baranova danced in the principal roles. 1943 saw losses and gains for Balanchine. His wife, Vera Zorina, left what existed of his ballet company to join Ballet Theatre. Interestingly, she would go on to dance the role of Terpsichore, which he had created for Alexandra Danilova in Apollo at her new company. Going the other way, newly minted Ballet Theatre principal Jerome Robbins saw his first Balanchine ballet and was supremely impressed. A few SAB alums spent the summer choreographing in a barn in Pennsylvania. Nora and Patricia White both went and spent their summer dancing there. After Joan Bailey left Carmelita Muracci, she worked for a little bit in New York, doing mostly flamenco in nightclub shows. Her mother had been receiving calls from studios asking if she could do films, so she went back out to Los Angeles to become a studio dancer. She ended up working with Lester Horton, creator of the Horton technique. Chima Uluigi, or Chichi Chanel as she goes on Instagram, has amazing videos of this particular technique. If you want to get a better sense, I'm going to link her Instagram in the show notes and the description. For Bailey, this was her first real introduction to contemporary dance, outside of a summer course with a Graham Company member. But in her opinion, her flamenco training had prepared her well. There was a class each day before rehearsals with Bella Lewitsky, which both Bailey and Horton would take. This year, Joan Bailey did one film with Lester Horton, White Savage, along with another dance film, Hello Frisco Hello. 1944 was a year full of New York ballet events and successes. The Ballet Russe de Monte Carlo came to New York to perform. The cast included Alexandra Danilova, Mary Tolchief, and Igor Yuskievich. You know the first of these. The latter will be chilling in the background for the next couple of episodes, but the middle one needs her proper introduction. Marie Tolchief was the daughter of a Native American father and an Irish-Scottish mother, born in Oklahoma. The temptation to use an exclamation mark after writing Oklahoma in my script was real. I work hard for you guys. The family was pretty well off because of oil royalties, and their mother had strong ambitions for her children. Both Marie and her sister Marjorie studied dance and music, but both ended up choosing to pursue dance. Marie, or Maria because apparently you can call her both, was originally called Betty Marie until Agnes DeMille suggested that Betty wasn't a good name for a ballerina. I'm sure that Ali and I would concur. If you didn't see my interview with Ali O'Brien and others, listen to that. Agnes DeMille is a surprisingly pervasive figure in this story, just chilling in the background. But she also wrote extensively, which makes her a really good resource for the historical record. Continuing her ballet training, Marie studied under Bronislava Nijinska before joining the Ballet Russe, singular, in 1942 at the age of 17. That feels very young if you're me and you know where this episode ends. Actually, four once and future Mrs. Balanchines performed in New York this year. We just met Marie Tolchief, and by now you should be pretty familiar with the other three. Balanchine choreographed Dream with Music, a musical for Vera Zorina. Tamara Jeeva performed with her husband in the play Peep Show. Alexandra Danilova performed in Song of Norway, choreographed by George Balanchine. Danilova was part of the Ballet Russe, singular, who loaned dancers to the production. Nora White and Marie Tolchief were also in this show. Stealing a little bit from the book Broadway Show by Show, Song of Norway offered a score based on themes by a classical composer combined with a biographical plot unencumbered by too much fidelity to historical accuracy. I love it. The aforementioned classical composer was Grieg, who is most famous for his extensive incidental music he wrote for Ibsen's play Peer Gynt. You might be thinking, most famous for something, 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 something? I know it sounds obscure, but if you look up In the Hall of the Mountain King, it's one of the better known pieces of classical music. The show took something vaguely related to his life and turned it into a musical. It actually premiered on the other side of the country as a production from the Los Angeles and San Francisco Light Opera Association. It wasn't the only operetta Mr. B choreographed that year. He also worked on The Merry Widow. But back to Song of Norway. Working with the Ballet Russe, singular, led to some work creating ballet for the company. He created the new ballet, Danse Concertant, alongside a revival of Les Bourgeois Gentilhommes for the company. Also at Ballet Theatre and on Broadway was the huge dual successes of the ballet Fancy Free and the musical On the Town. I talked a bit about this show last season, but I'm going to get more into it later because all of the ballerinas, every single one, are in the revival. All of them. There are no ballerinas not in that revival. That's not true. I'm just lying to you. There's a lot, though. Pulling from New York City Ballet to cast On the Town becomes a very normal thing to do. I do want to share one interesting observation from the book What the Eye Hears, A History of Tap Dancing. In one sense, tap, America's natural way of dancing, should have been easier than ballet to integrate into the native plots of American musical plays. Ballet dancers had always lost jobs to tap dancers. Tap had always been more popular than ballet. Here was a chance to turn the table. Joan Bailey continued to work as a studio dancer in Hollywood, doing another film with Lester Horton, Phantom Lady, in which she danced on point. She also appeared in The Lodger, a reasonably well-known film in which a woman suspects the lodger she has taken in is actually Jack the Ripper. This was not the original 1927 Alfred Hitchcock version of the film, but a remake from almost a decade later. IMDb has been fantastically helpful by telling me that Joan Bailey was an uncredited, undetermined secondary role. Thanks a bunch. It did give me some interesting trivia about the film, though. It's set in 1888, around the time of the Ripper murders, and one of the characters tries to find fingerprints, but that technology wouldn't exist until 1892, a few years later. Also, the leading lady, Merle Oberon, was married to the cinematographer Lucien Balliard. Oberon had been in a car accident which left her with pretty significant facial scarring. For this film, Ballard created a special type of lighting for her which made her face appear unscarred on film. It's called the Obi in her honour. Balanchine spent a little time in Hollywood this year as the dance director for Follow the Boys. The film featured Vera Zarina alongside Orson Welles, Marlene Dietrich, Donald O'Connor, and the Andrew sisters. If this cast sounds insanely famous, that's because the film was made as a wartime morale booster. It would be Balanchine's last film. He does have later IMDb credits, but those are all documentaries and filmed versions of his stage ballets. With the year's successes on Broadway and the return of significant ballet work, he prepared to return to where he'd begun. In 1945, George created his first work for ballet theatre. Sort of. Vera Zarina was cast as Ariel in their new version of The Tempest, and Balanchine assisted with her movement. Dancing with George Balanchine, Marie Tolchief completely overhauled her technique, modelling herself after Mary Ellen, a ballerina in the company whom Mr. B favoured. On Broadway, he choreographed Mr. Strauss Goes to Boston, which featured Harold Lang. In 1946, Tamara Jeeva worked as a choreographer on Spectre of the Rose,
Ray Weimer danced in the film Till the Clouds Roll By, and Joan Bailey danced in the film Shady Lady. Balanchine created two significant ballets this year. The first was La Sonnambula, or The Sleepwalker, created for the Ballet Russe, singular. The ballet has two very different parts. An opening scene with a party. The primary female role in that part is the coquette. The second scene sees a sleepwalker dance across the stage with a poet who she cannot see. George offered Danilova her choice of the two principal female roles. She chose the sleepwalker. Marie Tallchief was cast as the coquette. The other significant ballet was The Four Temperaments, or if you're short on time, The Four T's. It's based on the old historical medical idea that four temperaments or emotions linked to various parts of the body and diseases. I promise you that studying this will not get you through med school or fix your cold. The actual ballet doesn't reflect the historical idea as closely as historians might want it to, but it's still a really great work. Calling it a ballet is a bit of a misnomer because the piece draws as much from Cubist painting and African-American dance styles as it does from Petipa. Balanchine's earlier work on Broadway introduced him to great dancers like Josephine Baker, Catherine Dunham, and the Nicholas Brothers, as well as to the styles they were trained in. The Four T's uses all of these elements and combine them together with the completeness and clarity that's usually associated with classicism. It was performed on the first bill for the New Ballet Society, a subscription-only model to produce ballet. Vera Zarina travelled to Reno to divorce Balanchine in order to marry composer Goddard Lieberson, who she'd stay with until his death in 1977. Balanchine wasted no time finding himself a new wife, which he found at SAB. He approached Marie Tallchief and said, "Maria, I would like you to become my wife. Yes, I would like you to marry me." Her response? "But George, I'm not sure that I love you. I feel that I hardly know you." To which he replied, "That doesn't make any difference at all, Maria. We can get married and work together, and if it lasts, if it's only for a few years, that's fine. If it doesn't work, well, that's fine too." The two of them were married that year. George was 42. Marie was half of that. Next week is either another divertissements episode or a longer interview. You, and additionally I, will have to see. After that, we get to the Tallchief years, where Balanchine shifts away from Broadway and the New York City Ballet really begins to take shape. Until then, keep dancing. Bye.